monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on cover teams for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not publicized. The stakes are buried, not headlined. Its percentages are silent, not praised.
Billions of people just living out their lives. Oblivious.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
Poor.
The best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Shh, say it again, Shal. This is AJ of InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
Cold Reality Report. This is Clint coming to you as a substitute host today. Shali's again predisposed, doing some other stuff, passing the show on. Appreciate the opportunity. We're going to do a little follow-up show on our show a couple weeks ago. I've got Mr. Patrick. Ooh, I can't use Mr. anymore. Oh, found out what Mr. means. Yeah, can't use that word. Patrick Jordan is joining us from VaccineFraud.com. He has just released the last book in his series, which is ironic because the first to the last book hasn't been released, which is the book we've been discussing, which is the Prion Agenda, his book Continuum, which is sort of the grand finale, his final work, as far as we know. Is out, and I'll let Patrick tell you how to grab that, but you can go to vaccinefraud.com and find the details, I'm sure. Patrick, welcome to the show. I was trying to figure out a title for today's show, and I came up with, we talked about this last a couple weeks ago, so if you missed the show a couple weeks ago, you might want to check that out. There's some things that might be said today, might be a little strange. If you missed the first show, we're going to be talking about prions, what they are and how they operate. And I figured out we should call this show the the unfolding of man, how man-made evolution is killing us.
Ooh, nice. And thanks for having me, Clint, and hello everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you told me something. You told me something. Well, first of all, where can people get your books? Because
this is a good thing. I want to do it like in person, so that nobody is confused and nobody gets upset. I released my last book, and the reason is because I had to know where I was going. I had to know where this insanity was going to stop. And Prion Agenda, I'm working on it right now. And that'll come out, and it would probably be better if you read Prion Agenda and then Continuum, but Continuum is a standalone book. But because it's the last one that I can tolerate to do, I've been at this for 3 years. It's like a 3,000-page epic. I figured we can have two different covers. One cover is in color, and one color is just black and white, like my very first book, ICD-999. And I thought, wouldn't it be kind of like an artistic, poetic way to close out the series to offer two different covers? Now, everybody, listen to me. It's the exact same book, different covers. It's like when they do it like a comic book, and you have Spider-Man on, you know, on the front cover, and he's like hanging off a building. But it's the same issue as Spider-Man, but he's like, you know, poking his head out of a sewer. Same book, different cover. So go to Vaccine Fraud, and you can pick up all the links there. Did I update that? I think I did. Oh my goodness! If you can't find it at Vaccine Fraud, just email me, and I'll send you the links.
Very good. Yeah, so a little update before we go on to that, because that just freaked me out what you just told me yesterday, and then I just looked it up. I'm like, oh yeah, I found two new tests, one from 2014, one from 2016. This one talking about how we can test for the Khrushchev-Yakov disease, which is the transmissible form of mad cow disease, or what we call prion disease. And this particular one developed in France, and we talked about the PMCA, which is the prion misfolding cyclic amplification. So literally, your ultrasound put upon blood or other, you know, brain material or whatever, and there's healthy prions and infected prions, and if you hit them with protein misfolding cyclic amplification, another word for basically ultrasound, well, then all of a sudden the prions come alive out of their dormant state and they start misfolding, all of the other healthy prions that happen naturally in the body. Well, they now have a test for this, and it's two types of tests. And it just happens to be that it's a blood test, and they actually take the blood out and bombard the blood with PMCA, or a variant thereof. And it said it correctly and consistently identified three of the four VCJD affected patients and yielded no false positive result in any of the 141 healthy controls. So you have a test, a new test, a blood test, but I stress again here, how are they testing the blood? Well, it's the same way that they would look at your child, your unborn child, through the ultrasound technique. So, I mean, literally, you would be bombarding your child with the same test that they use to activate these prions in your body, these infectious, which is a term I don't really like, but technically, that is what it's kind of doing. It's, say, reprogramming prions that will go, and they will misfold, cause other proteins in the body to misfold or evolve, as we discussed last week. This man-made evolution, if you will. The other test talks about something that I was a little concerned about, something called ASA, which is prion amyloid seeding assays. You ever heard of that, Patrick?
I'm going to ask you to give me that acronym again.
So it's amyloid seeding assay, ASA.
They haven't heard of it.
To measure prion protein conversion time from normal form to prion form. Basically, same thing, except now it can be done in blood, urine, and whatever other body fluid you can think of. So that's the newer one, and I guess it's even better. I was just looking at that, and then, you know, the other day you talked about, I'll let you explain this, but aerosolized prions. In other words, we talk about chemtrails, we talk about all kinds of different government experiments that are done on a constant basis, because we do have, for those who don't know, Title 50 and Title 32, I think it is, talks about the, well, if you just type in U.S. code, you can find the Active Biological Weapons Program. I cover that in my documentary very thoroughly, and it basically says that, yes, government can, for experimental research or other purposes, which basically covers every purpose you can imagine, they can test biological weapons on the population, the general public, that is, the goyim, that's us. Yeah, all of us, that's part of being a citizen, is you're volunteering to be a test subject at any time without notification. And so we're talking about the aerosolization of prions. So let's talk about that a little before we get into any other subjects.
Okay, but I got to apologize because we can't without doing like the Fred Flintstone, running your feet really fast before you overcome friction and then the car moves. I got some notes here to... The most important thing people need to know about this, because I've been listening to our earliest show. You and I did show number 70 when you were on RBN. And prions, by your own words, were like the most important topic on the planet. And I concur. Because of that, because of the scope of this problem, I want to convey something that, and people, take your Paxil now. You know, just get it over with. This is a two-hour show. I want to convey something that seems on the face of it very disheartening. But if you approach a problem rationally with no hope or expectations, then you can pursue the solution rationally instead of approaching it through emotion and hope and waiting for some outside source to figure it out for you. And so Rondi Chen teaches snake fist boxing, and he says, don't worry about getting hit, because by the time you worry about getting hit, you've already been hit. Glenn Keeley is a well-known figure on the Internet, and he says, what are you worried about eating GMO food for? It's all GMO. He says, go out and have a McDonald's. Don't worry about it. Now, you know, I don't subscribe to that, but on the face of it, both of these guys are right. And when you want to address the topic of aerosolization of prions, you have to come to the conclusion that I did over these past two books. We, meaning my researchers and I, came up with a body of work that undeniably shows that prions are now part of the environment. And if that is the case, then just by extension, because you asked me about aerosolization, and I started looking up references for the show. I couldn't find what I wanted to get at, because, you know, I got like 1,400 pages of text. But what I came across was the stuff where it says grazing animals can shed prions in their nasal secretions, that's their snot, and their saliva. And see, here's the single advantage I have, Clint, is I'm a farm boy. There's one thing I know about, and that's grazing animals. They hang their head low, and they gnaw on grass all freaking day long. So that means the entire surface of a pasture is nothing but spit and snot and urine and feces. And we've collected all the data necessary to demonstrate beyond the shadow of a doubt that everything that I just listed, those bodily secretions all have prions present. So then, there is a point where you and I do the hard work, you get the references, you don't need any backup after that, because it's like if it's on the grass and in the dirt, it's going to be part of the dust. And all you have to do is have the cattle come home to the milking station or the sheep walk across a dusty path, and the dust is in the air, the dust has prions in it, and tag, you're it, man.
Well, you know, I typed in just, you know, a basic phrase. I said aerosolization of prions, you know, and just hit enter and just see what comes up. And several things came up, but this one particularly has, you know, the great thing about the NCBI, Library of Medicine, Natural Institutes of Health, is that it links to so many other similar things that are happening right now or things that have happened. So it gives all the sources and all the things. So this particular one is aerosols transmit prions to immunocompetent and immunodeficient mice.
That's what I was looking for.
It explains the brain. So prions, the agents causing transmissible spongiform encephalopathies, which, again, is the same thing as mad cow disease. And as we discussed last week, or the week before last, it's basically all the dementias, all the diseases of modern day are being caused by the same thing. They have different names for the same disease, different symptoms, same disease. They colonize the brain, prions do, of hosts, after oral, parenteral, intralingual, or even transdermal uptake. However, prions are... Now here's the most important part, Patrick. Prions are not generally considered to be airborne.
Not generally.
So in other words, there's no way in hell that nature is going to allow prions to be an airborne thing, right? It's just not a natural occurrence. And here's a study, of course, about aerosolizing to make airborne unnaturally the prions. Right, so it's telling you right now that what we're doing is totally unnatural. We're basically creating a new type of weapon or perfecting it. And that should be disturbing enough because we're purposefully infecting, you know, again, these helpless, defenseless creatures. Because we got to remember all these studies, they're always about infecting. You always got to infect some animal before we can, you know, you always got to kill some animal to further the unnatural science that we now have. Here we report that inbred and crossbred wild-type mice, as well as other transgenic mice missing a specific, defense mechanism, efficiently develop scrapie upon exposure to aerosolized prions. And it goes on. Prions, which are the cause of fatal neurodegenerative disorders, termed transmissible spongiform encephalopathies, which again is sort of like holes in the brain, like Swiss cheese or a sponge, can be experimentally or naturally transmitted via prion-contaminated food, blood, milk, saliva, feces, and urine. Here we demonstrate that prions can be transmitted through aerosols in mice. This occurs in the absence of immune cells, as demonstrated by experiments with mice lacking the B-negative and T-negative follicular dendritic cells, or FDCs, lymphotoxins signaling, or with complement-deficient mice. So it's talking about basically destroying the immune system, which is what they've done to us, correct there, Mr. Patrick?
1972 WHO memos, if you want to know how to make a vaccine into a weapon.
Yeah.
They would take mice, they would shut off by immunosuppressant drugs, or they would breed them genetically to have not a functioning immune system. They would load them up with normally lethal virus. Every cell in their body had a lethal virus, and these mice would run around the cage like it was recess at grade school. And then they turn on the immune system, and the poor little beggars would either have just catastrophic organ failure and or die.
Well, you know, you read these studies, and you know, here's one, 1996, for God's sake, right? You get the impression as you're reading these studies, or at least just the titles of some of these studies, that you know, it's not like we're in an experimental phase so much. It's more like, well, we now, like, I don't know if they've genomed the prion or whatever, if they've got the whole instruction manual for prions, but they'll do these studies where they obviously they know what makes them tick because they're removing or adding something to them to make them do different things. Here's one that says prion protein, or PRP, with amino proximal deletions, restoring susceptibility of PRP knockout mice to scrappy. So, I mean, again, you know, listen to the title, restoring susceptibility of prions to mice. Well, okay, why would you want to do that? Why are you doing this, scientists? Who's signing your fucking paychecks, you stupid bastards? Why are you doing this? So obviously they have a notion where they can literally remove proximal amino acids to cause, you know, this to happen. Here's some other titles. This is back to 2003, 2004, 2007, 2009. The nasal cavity is a route for prion infection in hamsters. Neuroinvasion of the 263K scrappy strain. So how many strains do they have, for God's sake? After intranasal administration occurs through olfactory, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So again, through the nose. Role of the lympho-reticular system in prion neuroinvasion from the oral and nasal mucosa. Again, these you know, they are causing this to happen. This is not just something that you study in nature. What science, you know, is supposed to uncover the secrets of nature. No, they're causing it. They're forcing it. It's man-made evolution. It's man-made infectious disease. It's disgusting. It's disturbing. And no one's doing a damn thing about it. No one seems to understand this is the cause of all disease. Prion deposition in olfactory biopsy of sporadic Christoph-Jakob's disease, detection of pathologic prion protein in the olfactory epithelium and sporadic CJD. You know, it just goes on. Aerosols transmit prions to immunocompetent and immunodeficient mice. Correction, here's another study. Correction, back in 2001, correction, aerosols transmit prions to both kinds of mice. Porcine prion protein amyloid. So there's your pig.
Right.
You know, it just goes on and on. Nasal-associated lymphoid tissue of the Syrian golden hamster expresses high levels of PRP. So, it just keeps going and going. These amazing amounts of studies. And they're literally telling that they can spray these things now. They're unnaturally putting them into the air. They're not naturally spread. They're not naturally considered to be airborne. This is so disturbing. I don't know. You know, you combine that with the ability to hike up these antenna arrays all around us. I mean, you're spelling a disaster here, aren't we? I mean, we're literally, like I said, literally the unfolding amount, the evolution of man is happening in an unnatural way by scientists. And that's the best way I can put it.
It's so sinister. It's like somebody with a time bomb walking up to a mother with a baby in a stroller going, "Hey, ma'am, could you and your young one hold this for us for a while? We'll be back." It's no different. We're talking about warfare. You just described the engineering of a warfare agent. Just like in my first book that opened up aerosolized rabies, Rise and Fall of Kingdom Plantae. That's the one, and thank you, by the way, E.T., for getting me and Clint together. That's the first one that he had sent you. The Navy was looking into the aerosolization of rabies, I think, in the 1970s. You know, these are weapons projects. And so rabies is a virus. Let me read you something about the Nadia Visna virus. This is from a fellow in Sweden. In 2001, the influence of CXCR4, that's usually a gene code, Medea Visna virus-induced syncytium formation. Now, syncytium is the frothy cells that were first described as virus infection when they were doing polio cultures. And, of course, the monsters like Salk and Sabin, they go, you know, don't worry about that. That's just a monkey virus. Just ignore it. It's okay. It won't hurt anybody. So this frothy virus was getting into sheep, and this is what the fellow from Sweden was looking into, and he said unequivocally that this virus, the very thing that the Japs were shooting into the 4A tribe in New Guinea in, like, 1940-something or other, it's transmissible by milk, saliva, and nose-to-nose contact. Because, you know, if you've been around farm animals, animals bump noses. You know, they act like Eskimos, which means even Eskimos can get prion disease. The point being, Clint, everything that you enumerated so far backed up what the stuff that I had brought to the show that said all of these bodily components contained prion, amyloid, or viral material. And here's, this is the domino cascade, the infectious agent. And I, you know, I've been studying the work of Lawrence Brocksmeyer. Really impressive stuff that he does with just tuberculosis. Because tuberculosis can be the spore form of the bacteria, it can be cell wall deficient form, or it could be a viral-like subcellular thing. And all these things can provoke the prion response. So all you need is that infectious agent to get the prion going. And like you and I have said, you know, for the beginning of this exploration, prions are not bad. They're there for a reason. It's when they're misfolded that things go to hell. So the infection starts the prion process. The prions get misfolded. The prions then create the amyloid that is like an armor shell and poisonous to cells. And then, and here's the part that people aren't making the connection with. Then the body tries to do something about it because it realizes, hey, this stuff shouldn't be here. So it sends in the white blood cells. And a white blood cell has a very limited military response. It sees a threat and it blasts it with an oxidizer. And so they always talk about, oh, you know, all these people with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, man, they really need antioxidants. We really need to protect that brain tissue. When it's this completely, as you said, you know, this is a aftermath of a weapon. This is a completely unnatural, out of control situation. Those white blood cells were there to kick ass, take names, and get rid of the garbage. And so the oxidation is literally to kill the cells that were infected with the virus that made the prions that created the plaque. And the oxygen is there also to try to destroy the plaque, but the plaque aggregates. That means it clumps together, and it also folds. And if you can't get at the key molecules within those folds to hit it with the oxygen, you can't break it up. And so what you're getting, and, you know, this is all war analogy, what you're getting when these white blood cells come in to clean things up is collateral damage. And so then they say, in mainstream medicine and alternative medicine, oh, you know, dad's got the Alzheimer's and he really needs the antioxidants. Well, guess what? You're shutting down the, decommissioning the troops because they were there for a reason, using the only weapons that they had, and now you're fucking with them.
I'll tell you what, you know, they've got this science down to such a degree, reading from this same article.
Mm-hmm.
That, first of all, prion aerosols were produced by a nebulizing device with brain hemogenates as concentrations, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Well, gosh, what do we give children with asthma? Isn't it called a nebulizer?
It is, but can I share my horror with you?
Mm.
When I came across the stuff that had to do with grazing animals, and, you know, it's all about snot and spit, I thought, my God, all you have to do to be able to be exposed to prion, because, you know, it's all about statistical probability. You can be exposed to prion, but if it doesn't take, you know, if it doesn't start the misfold of the normal stuff, then you've dodged a bullet. But, you know, it's like X-Files with the nebulizers aside. All they have to do is walk through the mist of somebody that sneezed.
Was there an X-Files that had that?
I'm trying to remember the name of the episode. I can actually look it up. They were using asthma inhalers to spread a mind control drug.
Dude. Well, I guess you could call this a mind control drug.
Oh, my God. That's so sick. True.
So, yeah. You know, it says, so they'll basically reinfect from derived from terminally scrappy, sick, or healthy mice. And they put them in what's called an inhalation chamber. The things they do to these animals are absolutely disgusting and sick. So, I mean, you can imagine being in a chamber introduced with all manner of horrible things, and you have to breathe, so you breathe it in. It's such a sick, it's unbelievable sickness in our military, in our National Institutes of Health. Suck my cock, you fuckers. Aerosolized particles had a maximal diameter of 10, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So they're really small. Nothing you can see. But here's what it says. It said that all TGA-20 mice, though expressing that, exposed to aerosols derived from IBH, succumbed to scrappy with an attack rate of 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I go down a little bit here, and it doesn't just tell you that, you know, they have all the mice. See, what they do with laboratory mice, Patrick, I know you know this, but with laboratory mice, they have different strains of mice. It's a little fucking slave trade, man. It's like they have all kinds of different mice that are either express or don't express certain chromosomal features and, you know, different aspects of the immune system. And so they say survival times of different mouse strains exposed to prion aerosols from various periods. TGA-20 mice did not develop the clinical scrappy. So it's interesting to look and see which mice don't actually, you know, which creatures don't actually, you know, have a problem, don't actually have the spongiform encephalopathy, the heating of the brain, because they are infected with scrappy prions, sheep, basically. And it says, again, you know, but they're not just infecting mice to see what happens. They're saying, what happens if we have this mice, this mice, this mice, this mice, and this mice, these mice, excuse me, and each one has a different expression. In the above experiments, all the PRP-expressing mice treated with the Western blot analysis, etc., were invariably found 100% with infectious scrappy and display all typical histopathological features of scrappy, including spongiosis, is what they call it, and astrogliosis. So in other words, they now know that if a mice that expresses a certain gene will be immune to it, but a mice that does express that gene, whatever TGA-20 is, then they're going to have a 100% infection rate, and it's going to kill them. And what's so interesting about that is of course, if we were to do a cross-section and correlate all of this information, we could probably find, Patrick, that either some food ingredient or some vaccine ingredient or something else is specifically responsible for doing the same exact thing in people, which is to make certain things express themselves and certain things not express themselves, so that when this is done, we would find that the people who are expressing the genes will certainly, or the proteins, will get the disease and have the plaques and everything happen, and the ones that don't won't. And I know I've always been concerned about this because this makes it a designer weapon. It means it means that certain lots of vaccine could be used in different populations. It means so many different things that it's really frightening to consider it this way. But we have to, like you said, we have to start thinking of this as that medicine in and of itself is a weapon. The nurses and the doctors are complete morons, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to anything as far as constructive, you know, thought or self-criticism or anything like that. They're gods. They, you know, for God's sake, they walk into a room, hold their hands up, and someone dresses them. Right? So it's very frightening to see that they've got this to such a science that they can make the mice or specifically get the mice to express a certain thing before they even infect them, so that they know that a certain immunodeficiency will cause prion disease and a certain one won't.
So what surprised me is, let's do a little biology. A chromosome is those things that you see on those really fuzzy X-rays that look like X's. And so if you take the chromosome that looks like an X and you split it vertically down the middle, so you got like an arrow going to the right and an arrow going to the left. Those two arrow-like things, the half of the chromosome, is called an allele. On the allele are genes. In the genes are base pairs. And what you were saying is that there is a point where all they have to do is change an amino acid in the formed protein, because a prion is a protein, and the proteins are coded for by genes. So these base pairs are read. They're taken by RNA into the ribosome, they're turned into a protein, and then you got something that can be folded, unfolded, or misfolded. Well, what they're doing next is they're going, hey man, let's piss with one of the amino acids, and you said proximal, so that means like more towards the center than towards the end. Let's get inside of it and just piss around with one of the amino acids and see what happens. And You freaked me out, because my information so far showed that there are at least 20 different types of amyloids that affect humans, which to me would mean there's 20 different types of prions that make these variant mutant amyloids. But you had said something like 263 scrappy strains.
Again, you got to figure that if they're doing this to mice, and I can go and I can see a whole website full of hundreds and hundreds of different mice expressing different traits and qualities and this positive and this negative, well, what makes you think they're not doing that to every other living thing on Earth?
That's
or
what I call
non-living thing.
I call that lot and serial number variations of vaccines. Because they're barcoded, they're trackable, there's electronic medical records. So they could give Clint, you know, like lot number 5 for the number of deaths, you know, serial number 666. And they could give Pat lot number, 9 for the number of completion, serial number 11, 911. And we would get different diseases, because the lot and serial number of those vaccines were different. Had nothing to do whatsoever with our genes, but how they manipulated our genes. And, Clint, if the listeners can help us out, a long time ago, I can't remember if it was print media or, audiovisual media, there was an advertisement that says, did you know that when you ate a piece of rye bread, it instantaneously activates 40 different genes in your body. Mm-hmm. Never been able to find that again. But this is what we're looking at, because you had said earlier, it might be something in our environment or our food that's activating that lot and serial number mutation that they put into our gene code. That's called a molecular switch.
Yeah.
And who would know? You know, you go out for your nice piece of Jewish rye and you come out with holes in your head.
Here's something disturbing, man. And again, this is the way these assholes talk. They just no respect for life, no respect for the natural design, as chaotic as it may seem. No respect for anything of source. It's just disgusting. Listen to how they talk. This is the chapter on correlation of exposure time to prion aerosols in the incubation period. Okay, how much time did it take? If I put a test mouse, a poor, helpless, defenseless thing that we've genetically altered, because as you say, everything, including us, has been genetically altered. That's really what we're talking about. We're all GMO at this point. How do you find a human subject right now that is not genetically altered in some way from either what we're talking about, the food, or the, you know, it would be impossible. None of us have the correct genetic switches turned on and off. So let's hear what they say. You know, this is the experimental mind. This is that false scientific mind that just disgusts me. It makes me want to slit their throats. We then sought to determine the minimal exposure time that would allow prion transmission via aerosols.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
GA20 mice were exposed to aerosolized IBH 20% for various durations, 1, 5, or 10 minutes, in two independent experiments. Surprisingly, we were very pleased to find out, in other words, that an exposure time of only 1 minute was found to be sufficient to induce 100% scrappy attack rate. Longer exposures to prion-containing aerosols strongly correlated with a shortened incubation period. So here they've just happily discovered that if I expose a rat or a mouse to just 1 minute of just basically what we're talking about is just cells, you know, proteins from, it's not like you're putting poisons or anything, you know, you're literally aerosolizing animals. I don't know how it reminds me, Patrick, did you ever see the remake of War of the Worlds, by chance?
Oh, my God, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
They're spraying the blood.
Yeah.
Basically, a red shit all over the planet was growing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what this reminds me of. They're aerosolizing. In that movie, they were basically aerosolizing us, spraying us into the environment to seed, mixed with whatever seeds to grow their, you know, their new planet, basically. This is what this fucking reminds me of. It's kind of freaky when you think of it that way. You're fucking putting an animal into La Machine, right? A blender, and nebulizing the fuck out of it, and putting it into the air, having a mouse breathe it for only 1 minute, and whatever mouse you use that has that susceptibility to it has the infection. 100% kill rate is what we're talking about. And they're very pleased about that, you see. They're very, very excited about that. But what was even more pleasing, more lovely, was the fact that the longer you expose them to the mice, 5 or 10 minutes, the shorter the incubation rate. So in other words, the more prions I get into you, the more chance that one of them is going to be ready to hatch. One of them is going to be ready to wake the fuck up and start infecting or misfolding other, reprogramming all the other proteins in the body and basically kill the hell out of these mice. So, again, just disgusting behavior by human beings. This is the most disgusting aspect, I think, of our society is the fact that we are so pleased with ourselves that we can literally put a mouse in a freaking incubation chamber, force it to breathe in basically pulverized proteins from animals. Like I said, think of that movie. And then be so pleased with ourselves that we had 100% infection rate. And that at any time, they're, I mean, what do you say, Patrick? What are all these chemtrails? What are they doing? What are they spraying on us? I don't know what to say. One of the things we didn't talk about also is how many diabetics are there that are shooting insulin?
Oh, wow.
Well, insulin is, of course, made of bovine parts. And so insulin is one of the main concerns, according to the CDC, about spreading prion disease. But again, we have to stress that what this is talking about is the fact that they are incubators. They sit there. They can sit there, according to the, I'm sure, uncertain research, they can sit for up to 50 years, probably longer, without ever being activated. As soon as you hit them, though, with ultrasound, all of a sudden they're activated, right? So different things would activate them. But the notion that they're just kind of like sitting around, and as you say, they're sitting around everywhere, again, thinking about that War of the Worlds thing, just, I mean, what the hell, dude? This cannot be. You know, I go back and I say, what is causing mankind to do this? What the hell could possibly be causing us to do exactly what those aliens did in War of the Worlds? What could possibly be causing us to literally infect the entire fucking ground, the air, the water, the food, and the medicine with fucking prion disease?
And, you know, to carry on this seeming dichotomy between what you and I would consider reality and the fantasy of science fiction. What you just described, what I've been talking about, what Glenn Keeley had like resigned himself to, was total biosphere terraforming. The entire planet has been terraformed. It's been changed at the genetic level to serve the virus, to serve the beast, to serve the archon. And so when I look at women, and, you know, my entire body of work has said there will either be women or a single woman that understands what we're talking about, and she will be the change that corrects what's wrong with the world. But, my God, Clint, stop opening your legs to the archons. These babies that grow up to be college students that will do anything to serve their masters and, you know, let me change one amino acid for you so I can make a weaponized prion. Oh, please give me an A+.
Give me a grant.
They got to come from somewhere. Stop breeding them. So the Nihilistic Gnostics, their religion said that having children, because they, like I, believe that we're in hell, having children was the most grievous sin. Stop having these babies that are the prion agenda. They're merely thumb puppets for the virus inside of them, telling them, hey, terraform this planet so that I can live here. Because clean air, clean water, good food is poison to these creatures. That's why they're eliminating it. They don't want to be in an environment that's helpful to us.
That probably sounds weird to people. But, you know, we've done so many shows and talked so much about the notion of brain parasites, the notion, you know, again, the Gnostics called them demented brain parasites. Gaia spore, the spore of, you know, floating around in space, which, you know, are prions, is what we're talking about. We're talking about the same thing. very, very, very frightening notion to think, you know, because, you know, we talked about this, you know, we see all these monsters in Hollywood, but the real monster is microscopic. There's nothing you're ever going to see. Hell, you're not even going to know that it's slowly altering your perceptions, slowly altering and destroying the moral center of the brain. It's, I mean, you're never going to realize that there's no monster chasing you down the spaceship hallway. Right? It's hiding around the corner. It's literally infecting you. And Patrick, I don't think, I mean, I know there's a few other people out there talking about this, but there really isn't, is there? There's no one talking about it. There's scientific studies. There's all kinds of shit that we can find that's happening behind closed doors, probably with non-disclosure agreements and all that. But who's talking about this, man? Who out there is talking about this?
Well, the difference between you and me is we're not afraid to face reality. They hint at, and like you, when I read these scientific papers, it's like, damn, that was a coded message to the adepts, because they'll do the thing called paradox. Well, they'll make a statement, and then if you read the next line or the next paragraph down, they'll completely reverse it in scientific papers. So it's like, that ain't science. So they're dancing around the topic, but you got to think that these scientists at that level of understanding, they got to be scared shitless, like we all should be, that this terraforming is happening and that they're party to it. Let's see, if they were scared, then they would become the whistleblower. They would repent of their sins, and they would fucking do something about it. But you and I are the only ones talking about it because we're not afraid.
Well, or we're not infected. That's the only other thing I can think of, is that, you know, how could so many scientists be working on this, knowing that it's the cause of all this disease, knowing that these fuckers are weaponizing it, knowing that it's being spread to people's children, and no one's talking about it. The only thing I can think is that we're talking about people who have lost their, I hate to say humanity, but they've lost their, it's, and all I can keep thinking is they're infected. Their brains, their minds are not, they are not their own man. They're not capable of whistleblowing.
Which, you know, you've got your favorite zombie parasites. Mine will always be the parasitic wasp that stings a caterpillar. The grubs grow inside the caterpillar. They avoid all, like, the essential organs, but they liquefy it from the inside out. Then they have the caterpillar walk to the top of a plant, and the grubs in the brain actually steer it as if it was a school bus. The grubs in the body hatch from the body, and the grubs in the brain ensure that this big caterpillar defends the hatching grubs, because, you know, everything parasitizes everything else, or you know, is a predator on other things. The caterpillar will actually protect the grubs as they're hatching from its already dead body. And that's the only analogy I can make for these fucking scientists, that they're protecting the bug inside them that made them do it.
Yeah, again, you know, the average person, that's going to sound crazy. And you know what? To the infected person, it would probably sound, I sometimes wonder if that's where cognitive dissonance comes from.
Well, and I've got a list member, Hey Furnace Man. He works with what he calls scarecrows, and it's because they look like humans, but there's nothing inside. And he will start to address a topic similar to what we're talking about here, and he says their whole affect goes blank. They shut down. It's like a protective mechanism. The bug inside can't let itself be seen, because stealth and camouflage is the only weapon it has. And see, Clint, you and I talk about some pretty damned disturbing stuff, but I wouldn't be in this war if I didn't think it could be won. So if we realize that something like this, the virus that causes the scrapy protein, is a microbiological entity that can be known and can be defeated, then we have to approach it from that point of view. It's like, okay, what is this thing? What is, and I hate to sound new agey, what's its weaknesses? And that's what you do with your enemy. You scope out its weakness, and then you destroy it utterly. So the bug, when it's characterized that way, like a tapeworm, you can have a 40-foot-long tapeworm in your intestines, but as soon as it's out of your intestine, that thing's going to die in the sun, man, because it needs stealth and camouflage, and it would much rather that you never knew it existed because it's getting a free ride and a free meal.
Well, I mean, I would even say it's the sun that kills it. It's the oxygen. It can't breathe in an oxygen environment.
Oh, my God. We got to get Mr. Oxygen on here.
Yeah. Sometime I'll see if he can do a show. Cause, you know, last thing he said to me, because I was talking about prions, was he was, you know, this is Ed McCabe. He used to go on the Donahue show and all those way back when. They call him Mr.
Wow.
Dr. Oxygen. And last thing he said was, if you ever want to do a show on prions, you know, I'd be down with it. And I'm like, holy shit, you know about prions? So he seemed to think that oxygen was the answer as well. So,
and see, let's go back. The very small armaments of the white blood cell army focuses around the oxygen radical. And the oxygen radical, I like tying all these new agey, seemingly, you know, airy-fairy kind of concepts together down into hard science. The oxygen radical is an electron donor. It is the equivalent of a lightning bolt. And so we're talking electronic biology. We're talking light, because lightning has light. So we got biophotons. We've got oxidation and reduction, you know, and everybody's all about, oh, antioxidants. Well, let's get some oxidation going here, because it's the only thing that's going to kick ass and take names. Otherwise, you're going to be part of the prion agenda. When you constantly antioxidate, you're actually creating the conditions that favor this takeover of your body from the inside out.
And you think about it, man, it's like every diet trend, every thing that ever becomes popular is being popularized by the propaganda arm of the parasite. It's like everything they want us to do to so-called improve our beauty or health is designed to basically help the, well, as you say, the prion agenda, right?
Because, you know, you and I had together exposed that the good cholesterol, the HDL, high-density lipoprotein, that's the one that actually allows the prion to anchor in the lymph system. What they say is good. And see, the creed of Satanism is good is evil and evil is good. That's opposite day. It's paradox. It's cognitive dissonance. But, see, it's all about what you and I do. They never said good for who or what. You know, it's good cholesterol. It's bad cholesterol. Well, it's good if you want to anchor the prions in your lymph system, which is where they grow, and then they migrate into the nervous system. It's good for them if you take the HDL, which is what they're promoting. But the LDL, the low-density lipoprotein, which they say, oh, that's bad, that's the thing that kicks prion's ass. But you got to avoid that, man. You need some statin drugs, baby. You need statin drugs till you can't stand up.
Drew actually just sent me, eating rye bread cures type 2 diabetes and activates 6 genes in your body.
Cool, man. Send that along, and thank you, Drew.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Yeah.
And hey, let's talk about diabetes, because that topic did get up, and I forgot to write a note on it. Alzheimer's is being reclassified as diabetes type 3.
Yeah, you said that.
But this is what we're saying. You know, the thing of it is, and I love this from the X-Files. It was the Anastasi episode where Floyd Red Crow Westerman was saying to Mulder, he says, "Are you willing to sacrifice yourself to the truth?" And that's what you and I have done. It's like, okay, this appears to be a hopeless fight, but there is, you know, a potentiality that we may be able to affect a change here. But are you willing to sacrifice yourself to the truth that all disease has prions involved in it? Prions and their amyloid and the viruses that created them are all contagious entities. Therefore, this is the Jordanization of them. Sacrificing yourself to the truth that then all diseases are contagious. That means cancer is contagious, diabetes is contagious, and I can't tell you how many times, because my mother was on dialysis for 11 years, you meet people of all walks of life and all kinds of diseases. Everybody told me that their doctor said they got diabetes from a virus. And when I was in school, I went through pre-med, it's like, nobody ever said that. But these are the people on the street. These are the people that were in dialysis because their kidneys failed, because they had the diabetes, and their doctor said, yeah, it was from a virus. And that stuck in my mind from, you know, well over like 15, 16 years ago. So everything now we can recharacterize as an infectious disease. So just living on planet Earth exposes you to death. Death, then, is an infectious disease.
Oh, man.
And once we accept that, Clint, you know, you have to get past, oh, the fear, the terror, the you know, feeling distraught. You know, get over yourself. Okay, now let's go fight it. So what does it take? Well, it appears to me, because Jessica Alba was getting crap from the health ranger, because, oh my God, they found SDS in her soap products. So sodium dodecyl sulfate is a Babylonian name change for sodium lauryl sulfate, which is a detergent surfactant that's found in what? Freaking coconut, man. So what the hell is the problem? Well, there's a little, like, subculture that says, oh, SLS, man, that might cause cancer. Really? It's from freaking coconut. You think you ought to quit eating coconuts? But it's in detergents. But all, and see, this is the beautiful part about the bug trying to protect itself. All of the alternative, you know, healthy detergents are trying to remove SDS, which is SLS, from their formulation. Well, why would that be? Because this detergent is the enemy of prions. And it made perfect sense to me, because the other truth you have to sacrifice yourself to is there is no difference between the white coats, which is mainstream medicine, and the gray coats, which is alternative medicine. They're both working to the same agenda. They're trying to fuck you up. They're saying, oh, take the coconut oil, the surfactant out of your detergent because it's bad for it. Oh, bad for who? Bad for the prions, because Tide has SDS in it. And Tide is used by who? The bulk of the population, and probably the Illuminati, because they're scared of their damn weapon too. What else do these really big detergents have in them? They also have a protein, a proteolytic enzyme called subtilisin. So Bacillus subtilis is a bacteria, usually found in sewer sludge, but now they from sewer sludge, but they put it in probiotics. It makes a proteolytic enzyme that, you know, and Clint, we're covering like two books worth of my work here. They're looking into the enzymatic degradation of prions in the environment, because they already know, man. They already know what I just told you. It's in the snot. It's in the spit. It's on the grass. It's in the dust. It's in buried animals. We got to get rid of the prions or they're going to kill us. So they're looking into bacteria that make enzymes that break down proteins, and subtilisin is in these major laundry detergents. So on one hand, you got like all these big scented, you know, toxic laundry detergents that can kill prions, and everybody's running away from them because they want to be healthy, and they run into the detergent that is lacking everything that can fuck up a prion's day. It's a work of art, man.
You know, let's talk about Mike Adams.
Do we have to?
A lot of people do, you know, they subscribe to Mike Adams. Why? Because Mike Adams appears on the Alex Jones Show, therefore he must be legitimate.
Oh, wow.
Let's talk about Mike Adams, the health ranger, because there is a lot of shit that you point out that comes from that website, particular website, that is pure bullshit, or, it, as you're alluding to, is designed, whether knowingly or unknowingly, mm-hmm. we aren't real sure sometimes, basically designed to further the the prion agenda, to further the continuum, to further the freaking, as you say, terraforming not only of the planet but of our bodies. You see this sort of coming out of that particular website a lot, and the information that comes from the Health Ranger is so, I don't know what the word is, finalistic. It's so, like, this is the end-all, be-all of all information. You must follow this. If you don't,
right.
You're going to, you know, die. Let's talk about this. I mean, because a lot of people put a lot of stock in the shit that comes out of there. So what's your opinion?
Okay, can we open up the choke on the shotgun and put in the buckshot so that we can cover just more than him?
You have no limitations here, my friend. I wouldn't be anywhere where there's limitations.
So I have it from somebody in the know that even Joe Mercola doesn't write all of the material on his website.
No.
He has at least 100 people, 50 of which are in the Philippines, that write material for him. And that's why, I don't even have comments on my website. I don't want people tagging themselves as having a particular view that the AI or the NSA might target them with. And my views are my own. If you don't like them, you know, go fuck yourself. If you do, then join my email list. So, you know, if you're not writing your own stuff, then how do you know that you subscribe to it as, like, you know, the figurehead of a particular website? And I have suspect that even though Mike Adams puts his name on certain articles, that he may or may not be the author of those articles. But like you said, he puts out finalistic and fatalistic material that when we lump Sayer G of, I call it Green Med Info, Mike Adams of Natural News, and Joe Mercola together, you see this absolute fever pitch of you must take apple cider vinegar, and you must take coconut oil. And see, I'm pretty sure we covered this on the last time we did the show, that's a two-stage approach to dismantling prions. It will open them up so that the detergent can break them off their anchor point. And although the detergent should be, a denaturant for the protein, it doesn't ensure by proteolytic enzyme or oxidation reaction that you've completely, like, destroyed it. And see, I've seen too many Jason slasher movies where, you know, the monster always comes back at the end. Until you've destroyed the thing and shown me the body parts, I'm not going to say, oh, yeah, apple cider vinegar and coconut oil is good enough. But they sell it all day long like it's the second coming. But if it simply breaks it off from the anchor point, then you've got this stuff circulating through your body, and then just like metastatic cancer, it can attach anywhere, again, reattach to the cell surface, and begin its destruction. So who's writing this stuff for them? you know, are they ignorant of what we just described? Because, Clint, I'm just a farm boy, and you're just a sound man. What the hell do we know?
That's true. Yeah, well, you know, and again, I don't think that most people consider that when they put something in their mouth, you know, like you said, this this article, again, eating rye bread activates 16s, and you saw as much as, what was it, 30 or something?
40 genes is what I remember.
Just from a piece of rye bread, and if you eat rye bread for a couple of weeks, it'll actually cure, literally, your diabetes. Because diabetes isn't, again, these words that we use, diabetes, they are just words to describe symptoms of the same disease, right? Which often is this sort of gene expression that's either happening or not happening. And so, you know, you think about this, what you're putting in your mouth is going to affect your body in ways that you can't even comprehend, that we can't comprehend, we certainly can't speak of in this show because we don't know it, right? But the notion that everything you put into your body, especially when you're vaccinating, inoculating your body with shit, you know, you just don't stop to consider that everything you throw in that machine is going to hit a switch. It's gonna affect you in ways. It's gonna cause you to be susceptible. It's gonna cause your immune system to respond or not respond or turn off or turn on. It's gonna do all kinds of things. And turning on sometimes is worse than being turned off, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't think this type of the aspect of food in that regard is considered by these people who say, eat more broccoli. Broccoli! Broccoli is good for you, yes! No, this kind of, it's just, you know, it's green and it grows from a plant that grows out of the ground, and therefore it must be good. But we just discussed what else is all over the ground and aerosolized. So I don't think most writers would ever stop and think about the design of the body, the way things affect, like I said, those epigenomic switches and stuff.
And let's not even go to epigenomes at the level of broccoli. Now, I love me some broccoli. And I used to, like when I was really young, in my 20s, I used to eat it raw. And boy, you'd just get a rush. And I hear this all the time from raw food users. It's, oh, man, I put such and such in the Green Star, and I drank that down, and I got such a feeling of being high. Well, guess what, folks? That's your adrenal corticosteroids kicking in to detoxify the poisons that you just put in your body, because at the least level, raw cruciferates have goiter gems in them. Now, goiter is that thing where your thyroid gland is so pooped out that it grows really, really big. So it, like, expands the factory floor even though there's only one machine inside. And it tries to work, though it can't. So you fall into frank hypothyroidism. So goiter gen meaning to create, it creates a goiter. And they're in the plants. Why are they in the plants? Because the plants don't want to be eaten by bugs. So the only way to get rid of a goiter gen is to leach it by steam or boiling, and that's why we cook certain foods. There's a reason for this. You just don't go to your Green Star and start dumping in, you know, your compost pile and say, gee, that tasted good.
And there,
you have to know biology.
There is a whole movement out there that says cook nothing, not meat, not anything, which I find patently ridiculous.
Well, okay, let me do another plug. If you want to be cured of ever eating meat again, then get my book called Same Pig, Different Lipstick, where I took a USDA publication from 1898 that is the best. And see, I used to study parasitology. It's like the best primer on parasites in the food system, you know, the meat end of it. that you will ever see. And man, if you don't like it, at least have a bucket to puke in while you're reading it, man, you're tougher than I am. Eating raw meat and feeding your pets raw meat, it's like, okay, yeah, in the wild, a pet would eat, not a pet, a dog or cat would eat another living creature. That's a given. But now, and I see we can tie all this together, Clint. Now, what are your pets fed? Corn and soybean and rice and maybe a little, you know, food flavoring. And why is that?
Don't forget the mouthfeel.
In the mouthfeel, oh my God.
DuPont.
What they're trying to do is make sure that the vaccines that they put in the pets and the microbes that came with them incubate in the same substrate in the pets that the microbes that they shot into the humans with vaccines has in the humans. Because what do humans eat? Soybeans and corn and rice and a little, you know, food flavoring. So they're trying to homogenize this terraforming, this biotransformation of the planet, and so everything is homogenous and harmonized throughout that. What they're doing, you know, I see this in its totality. This is a military assault that's planned like a chess game more than three steps in advance. They already know what they have done, what they are doing, and what they're going to do, and we're just catching up, like right now, to what they did to us, past tense. And so people feeding raw meat to animals, well, of course, yeah, in the wild, they would eat raw meat, and they would also get the parasites that come with that. And so when you grab a piece of meat that's probably now, you know, full of prions, for God's sakes, and you toss it to Fluffy, they're going to start to get all sorts of exotic parasites and the microbes that start the prion cascade, if not fully formed prions within the meat supply, because here's the thing. This is where you have to sacrifice yourself to the truth. The USDA, in my estimation, is part of the Sarai witch cult. So Sarai was the sister wife of Abram. 4,010 years ago. She was a witch, and she knew all the secrets of, like, ergot. She effected her escape from Egypt by giving them St. Anthony's fire through phytochemical means. The USDA is a branch of that witch cult, and they have total control over what kept animals eat. Now, a kept animal is either a pet or a human. There's no difference. They treat us as if we're lab rats. And I had a point, but I digress so much I forgot where I was going with this.
Well, we were talking about food and what it does to you.
We did start there, didn't we?
Yeah. Somehow we got on the gods. You gave me an idea, and it came back as the reverse of what I thought, which gives me just all kinds of weird feelings after talking to certain people that know who they are out there. So I just typed in, because I'm like, okay, so they're irradiating foods, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're irradiating foods to supposedly keep them on the shelf longer. And so my first instinct was there, I'll bet you radiation actually activates prions.
Oh, my God.
But it's actually the opposite. Inactivation of viral and prion pathogens by gamma radiation, deactivation of proteins on BSE info has ultraviolet radiation, ionizing radiation, and formalin. Inactivation of prion infectivity by ionizing rays. This is the opposite of what I expected to find. But then I started thinking, you know, I'm talking to Greg, a couple other people, they're trying to teach us that radiation is actually a really bad thing, right? All the time. But if radiation is inactivating prions,
Let's take a look at part of the problem here. When you and I do research, I take at least three sources and then try to divine a consensus from it. Even if all three sources are lying, then you simply go in the opposite direction and say, well, then this must be true because they all agree on the lie. One of the problems early on, and see, early on there weren't like 263 different scrapies. There weren't like 20 different amyloids. There was just like the beginnings before they started pissing with things. Because, you know, they're the ones that manipulated all these, like, it's like a software update. So early on, they found that formalin, formaldehyde, had no effect whatsoever on prions. Early on, they found that ionizing radiation in things like UV had no effect whatsoever. And then they had to bring the gamma radiation all the way up to like 1 million rads before they could affect a change in the prion protein. Now, if you consult different sources, they have different interpretations of what can disable a prion. And for the longest time, Clint, that bothered me. It's like, okay, is this just typical Illuminati bullshit disinformation, or is there a reason for that? And concurrently with that, I had arrived at the idea of the lot and serial number mutation of genes so that you could have a prion gene in the human body, which we do. In chromosome 20, there is the prion protein gene. And if it's intact, you make prions for whatever purpose that might be. But if you mutate that gene, then the prion itself becomes mutated, and then that process then will have been changed from what it naturally should have been. And then that explained to me why you can throw certain remedies, like, you know, let's go back to those three big newsletters where these three, you know, internationally known names will say, you need apple cider vinegar and coconut because we have one study where one guy took coconut oil and his Alzheimer's went away. Well, yeah, it might have went away for a while, and, you know, it might have created positive change, and there's two reasons for that. Either it went away temporarily and it will return with a vengeance, because I've got data that shows that with the use of anti-prion drugs. Or it only worked for him because he got that lot and serial number. He had only that variation of amyloid. But if he had 19 other variations of amyloid, then that remedy wouldn't work. And this is the part where they hook him with hope. You read something like in Green Med Influence, like, my God, if I only just take turmeric and coconut oil, I'll be cured. Well, yeah, if you have that amyloid. If you got 19 others, then you're still screwed, man. But you have to know the biology. You got to lose the hope. You got to move from hope and emotion to the hard science of it.
It's like law, no emotion allowed.
Oh, perfect, man. That's absolutely it.
Love does not live here.
Love does not live.
Let's talk about another poison. And I find it fascinating. Again, the cognitive dissonance. There's a whole movement out there about sustainably grown organic green coffee beans.
Oh my God!
So I was trying to tell certain people about, you know, what coffee actually does and how it's, you know, what is caffeine? What's the purpose of caffeine? And, you know, you can read about it. It's kind of hard to find sometimes because, you know, you don't want to ruin one of the main staples of the East India Company, right? So you know, you read about, if you can find the source, you can read about coffee and how they grow coffee trees. And basically, coffee trees are so poisonous, and of course, caffeine is that poison, that when it drips, you know, this insecticide, basically. And the insecticide, which is the caffeine, actually will actually seep into the soil and kill itself. Literally, the insecticide, the poison that is the caffeine from the coffee beans, will kill the root system of the tree itself. And they, when they grow coffee, they therefore have to wrap some of these trees just to make sure, ensure that the coffee bean that they're going to pick doesn't kill itself. And that's how poisonous this stuff is. So we're putting this coffee into our systems, grinding it up and running hot water over it, poisoning ourselves, and it gives you this false sense of euphoric, which a lot of poisons actually do. I mean, I personally love to take a little arsenic in a mushroom and be high on the poison, but I at least understand and comprehend that I'm poisoning myself and that what I'm seeing is not real. Otherwise, I'd have to believe that everybody can grow elf ears and speak in funny languages. I'm reading this stuff on coffee, and I'm like, holy shit, how did they turn this into a soothing, relaxing morning beverage?
He just crossed over three of my books, so I don't know what to do with that, because I got all these ideas crashing in my mind. Take that where you want to go with it, and I'll just kind of I'll follow you in from behind.
Well, I'll take the Mormon Church as an example. The Mormon Church is very much against coffees and teas and that sort of thing. Everybody thinks that's because of the caffeine, and it may very well be the caffeine, but it's actually, when you read about it, it's actually the tannins. Is what they really have a problem with. And so,
no kidding.
So you got all these Mormons who in public, they'll never have a soda machine at their little halls or churches. Well, they don't call them churches, meeting houses or whatever. But in secret, in their homes, they're like guzzling the Dr. Pepper or whatever the
cup. Oh, that's funny.
It's kind of funny the way all that works, but they're very against the actual tannins, but it all happens to be all caffeinated drinks. So I'm just curious what your take on this is and why coffee is on every corner. The Jewish, we call Starbucks, we call dollars for Israel because star. Bucks, right? The six-pointed star of Israel, and bucks means dollars. So every time buy coffee in Starbucks, you're basically supporting one of the main contributors to the causes for Israel. So Zionism, I should be more specific. So, I don't know. What's your take on it, man?
Dude, because I didn't know. I didn't have the background on the Mormons. See, I'm all about the tannins because I've traveled the world. And you can have parasites in you, the 12-inch long worms. You could have a 40-foot long tapeworm. But one of the more insidious things are the single-celled parasites. You got amoeba, you've got protozoa. And they can make your life absolute hell. But see, this is what I'm all about. We talk about some pretty just devastating stuff. But if you know the science, if you know the biology, if you know your enemy, and that was the second principle of Sun Tzu, the famous Chinese general. Know yourself, know your enemy. Well, okay, these single-cell parasites can make your life hell, but if you understand that they are a single cell and they can't protect themselves from the environment, from desiccation, then all they have to do is hit them up with a little tannin, and it shrivels them up, and they're done for, man. So whereas I don't use caffeinated beverages, and we can talk about caffeine in just a little bit, I do use the Holda Clark Black Walnut Tincture, and the green hull of the black walnut is high in a phenol, because that's the family of chemicals that it's in. Tannins are a phenol, and it just kills little bastards. And just the other day, because I was feeling kind of low. I work 17 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I can't suffer, downtime. I was feeling kind of low, and I thought, you know, it's about time for my maintenance dose of black walnut. I took it, and by God, I felt like a 20-year-old. Why? Because these little parasites steal your life. Cell for cell, they can line your intestines, and they're stealing your food. They're stealing your energy. They're stealing your attitude. And one of the things that I noticed when I went back onto a maintenance program of the green hull of the black walnut was that my give-a-shit came back. Because, you know, when you work on the farm, you got to expend a lot of labor. And there's times when you're just like, oh, man, I don't want to do that job. And, you worry about it longer than it takes to do the job. But if you get rid of the parasites that are literally stealing your life, you're like, oh, let's get this done. Oh, shit, that only took 4 hours. So that's tannins. So I wonder within the bug agenda, because, see, Clint, one thing that I do have is I can't insult anybody because I hate all human beings equally. I hate all religions equally. So I won't just say, you know, this one religion is bad. They're all bad. So, you know, Mormonism, it's bad. Why? Because they're run by the bug in their head. Their bug created the religion for them. And so what are they doing? They're serving the bug by not killing it with the tannins. That's my take on it. Well, and then the caffeine is, in the laboratory, they use pure caffeine to unzipper DNA. Once you get that DNA open, man, you can slip any damn thing you want in there.
So you're saying the caffeine...
Well, and see, Clint, you know, here's the beauty of it. And people will go out there, and I've had list members do this, you know, even some of my top list members. They'll go out there and go, well, they type in caffeine and DNA. And one study came back that, you know, drinking a cup of coffee actually repairs your DNA. And the first word in there was, it has an antioxidant effect. It's like, oh, fuck you with the antioxidants, man. But pure caffeine is what they use in microbiology to unzipper, because DNA is a double strand, to get those two strands to unravel and split apart. You use pure caffeine. So it's always been my suspicion that the use of caffeine in all sorts of beverages was to facilitate the insertion of all these genetic rewrites. And so let's think about that. Let's take it back to the Mormons. They're not attacking the bugs, and they're not allowing any genetic correction. So that would speak to me that they're protecting the thing that lives inside of them.
Well, and I've never seen such a, how do I put this, such a cult of equality, like a cult of personality. So many people so alike in everything they do. And, you know, what's really interesting about the Mormon culture is when you look at organizations like the, the FBI or the CIA, you find a vast majority of Mormons are hired for those types of organizations because they're, you know, their sign is the beehive, right? We have the beehive on our road signs because that's the symbol of the state. It's all over the church, of course, which is an ancient symbol going back to Egypt for the hive mind, right? So, I think about these things a lot. And I don't say these things to offend anybody. I love my neighbors. They're Mormon. And I love them to death. They're great people. But there still is that element of control, you know, that makes people act a certain way and keeps them, as you say, from you know, having certain things, ingesting certain things. Said they'll hoard the soda, but they will avoid coffee and tea like it's the plague.
And you know, my first inclination would have been, well, they're avoiding the caffeine, but if they're drinking caffeinated sodas, then you know that can't be an issue.
Right, it's very strange, and you know, I don't know, but from what I understand, they're avoiding the tannins, which I find you're making a very interesting point. Yeah. Oh man. Well, we got about a half an hour. Well, 20 minutes left or so. 25.
Okay, let me just make a tiny little segue back to, you know, I made the casual observation that on the X-Files, they had an episode where there was use of an inhaler as part of a military plot. And it was actually a disconnected two-part in the series. And so the second part of that, that's the only one I could find, you know, right now, was Season 6, Episode 20, called Three of a Kind. And it had the lone gunman in there. And it was the follow-up episode to where they introduced the idea of, like, a mass distribution of asthma inhalers to deliver a drug, a mind-control drug, called ergotamine histamine. Oh, you know what, Clint? See, I'm on dial-up. I had to search my databases. What do people have to do? Oh, my God, this is so stupid. Get on the net and look up ergotamine, histamine, X-Files, and you'll pull up the first episode. That's how backwards I am, man. I do have one light bulb hanging in my outhouse, though.
I find it interesting, too. You know, I think we talked about this way back when, but I find it interesting when you look at various television shows that you find that prions are discussed, but they're never actually revealed, right?
So mm-hmm.
I use one example is the show 24.
I've never forgotten since the first day you mentioned that.
Yeah, yeah. So so in the show 24, let me just read this. They called it a prion variant. Prion variant was the deadly pathogen engineered by Jonas Hodges of the Starkwood Company. I never watched the show before day 7. The development of the pathogen was ordered by a cabal of businessmen led by Alan Wilson, who conspired to cripple the security of the U.S. in order to gain defense contracts. The prion variant was an altered form of the Khrushchev-Yakub disease, which we've been talking about, and attacked the brain and nervous system, causing dementia, physical deterioration, and eventually death. Starkwood engineered it to be lethal within a shorter period, 1 or 2 days. So kind of like the mice, the pathogen would still be active in the human body for 2 hours after death. And it could be destroyed by heat of at least 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit. 5,000. Original pathogen was native to the East Congo.
Ooh.
Yeah. An experimental treatment for the disease was theoretically possible using stem cells. So, you know, you look at this and you're like, what the you know, they just put it out there in blatant form that this is a weaponized thing. But when we talk about it, Patrick, you know, I try to tell nurses, I try to tell doctors about this. They won't give me the time of the day because I don't have a credential. I don't have the diplomacy of the state. I don't have a diploma to have any kind of opinion that can be taken, and so I'm not, you know, I'm not good enough for that. But, you know, you see this, even throughout entertainment, you see this sort of notion, but no one would ever think to say, oh, maybe we should look at that. They're putting it into a fictional show like The X-Files or 24, mm-hmm. So it's probably, you know, it's just something we're not going to worry about. But I find that the reason we talk about science fiction so much, Patrick, is that, you know, science fiction isn't just for fun anymore. It's not just to say what could happen. It's like they're telling us what's going to happen. Right?
Predictive programming, yep.
Yeah, it's not of the imagination. It's more like, well, this is the logical conclusion of the future. This is what's going to happen. Let's predictively program. Yeah, exactly.
I think I found the other one. Season 5, Episode 3, Unusual Suspects. That may be the first one where they introduce ergotamine, histamine. And, you know, that, honest to God, that became a topic in one of my books because I was on the trail of ergot, which is a fungal growth on, you're going to love this, man, rye. So the grain rye hosts ergot, which produces an LSD analog. And it can lead to severe intoxication, and it can be lethal. But what they use it for is like as an abortifacient to like kill a growing fetus, or they use it during pregnancy for, you know, in titrated doses for other effects. They also use it for people that are nuts in the head. But it's the equivalent of LSD.
Well, I mean, you know, since I... Anne Blake Tracy, who also lives here in Utah, not too far, she wrote the seminal book, because she's an expert witness on in these court cases, you know, that have to do with school shootings and, you know, where Phil Hartman case, and that, she's an expert witness on these cases, and she wrote the book Prozac, Panacea, or Pandora. And the quotes in that book are amazing, but what she came to understand is that all these antipsychotics and antidepressants and shit, the antipsychotics especially, are one molecule difference from LSD. Right? LSD being that which was used by the CIA to really fuck people's worlds up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're literally giving people a psychotic that is one molecule away from LSD, and calling it an antipsychotic. And you wonder why, you know, that certain portion of the population, including myself, that has problems with their cytochrome response, their, you know, non-metabolizers, and so it poisons you, makes you crazy, and you do things that you otherwise wouldn't do. People wonder what the fuck's going on. Well, you got a whole society that is literally taking a quote-unquote medicine to make them not psychotic, when in actuality, it's a psychotic, but it only makes you psychotic if you cannot properly metabolize the drug, which is 10 to 20% of the population.
Which they already know, you know, down to lot and serial number, they know who has it because they got the control of medical records. So you keep talking. I'm going to try to look up a citation on cannabinoids.
Oh, well, you know, I remember several studies which you had some issue with, but I was like, yeah, buddy, about marijuana being, and I'm sure it's only the original.
There you go.
Natural source marijuana that used to be around in the 60s and 70s, you know, but not this altered shit like Monsanto's version of the double strain helix DNA new version of marijuana, which will have no medicinal properties whatsoever. And in fact, it will probably fuck you up royally because it's, you know, you have these receptors for, there's a reason that you have these receptors in your body for certain things, for opioids and for cannabinoids. And here they are messing with that to, again, deliver some reprogramming to your body, where otherwise, you know, there's all these studies that show that marijuana, and I don't like to call it marijuana, I should call it cannabis, it was either sativa or the other one, actually has an anti-prion or anti, you know, misfolding effect on prions. And I always found that to be very fascinating. And then I start, you know, I ask around, is there anybody that actually still sells the actual medicinal true, you know, pot anymore? And it's like impossible to find.
Which, you know, that always speaks to me that this is what I'm trying to portray here. And I try to keep it within a scientific framework. When I look at the old religions, 4,010 years ago, Sarai was using phytochemistry. And see, within alchemy, you've got stones, herbs, and animals. So that's minerals, phytochemicals, and hormone kind of.
Are you sure, you're sure it wasn't stoned animals?
I gotta write that one down. That's inspired, man. Hold on, I gotta take a note. Stones. Herbs. Oh, I like that. Okay. And so, you know, when we look at the spinoff of that, the USDA was going across the planet, internationally, you know, across, like, sovereign borders. The USDA was bioprospecting to the point where they found these anti-cancer plants in Kenya and harvested them to extinction. Now, when I read something like that, I go, yeah, yeah, right, they're probably still in Bill Gates' seed vault. But still, they eliminated an entire species from the face of the planet that could have interfered with things like leukemia. And so I attribute that to malice aforethought, a military operation to bioprospect for things that they can then use as weapons against us. So when I look at things like what they've done to cannabis, up to a certain point within the pharmacopoeia of many ancient cultures, it was considered a panacea. Mm. Then all of a sudden, reefer madness, promoted by who? Actually, the Rockefellers that induced the movie industry to demonize it. Then it became bad. And then the only time that it's now being released into the public is after their gene boys, that, you know, again, the USDA witch cult had their hands at the genetics of it and modified it into who knows what. Because there was a sex magazine, I think it's called High Times, and that, like, in the 1980s, they had an article where the U.S. government, behind 30-foot-tall fences with barbed wire, was growing 30-foot-tall trees of cannabis, because it's a tropical plant and it could attain like a stem of maybe like 6 inches in diameter and a height of 30 feet. The government in the 1980s was growing this stuff in Hawaii. Why would they do that? And my only conclusions, you know, I have no reservation jumping to conclusions, is they wanted to take something that had use and turn it into a weapon.
Well, like I said, it's you got to start considering, you know, why do these things, why do opioids and why do cannabinoids have an effect on us? Why does it take away pain? And it's because we have receptors in our body for it. We don't have receptors for a lot of things, but only about 100 or so things, I think. But these are one. These are the, you know. So if you have a receptor, that means that which attaches to the receptor can basically, you know, it's like foreplay. You're allowing the receptacle to get all lubed up and accept whatever's going to be stuck in it. So I mean, you're literally talking about, you know, one of the favorite things for people that don't know this. One of the favorite bugs that they like to mess with is the flu virus. Flu virus is very, very, very unpredictable. But what they can do with it is they can open it up and they can insert just about anything they want to into the husk of the virus. And then that thing can be delivered through flu virus. So you've got you can literally inject stuff into these, I don't know, what are they, viruses, right?
Mm-hmm. And the capsid, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it can be delivered to wherever the virus then goes and attaches to. Well, okay, so what the heck are they doing genetically altering this stuff to the point where it's going to actually, you know, it's going to still have the same plug, you know, like you plug an outlet into the wall, it's still gonna, it's gonna attach, and it's gonna start reprogramming or programming, sending whatever chemical, you know, that is into the correct place to get the right effect, all that, et cetera, et cetera. So what the hell is the purpose of this? Why change the DNA? Why, you know, mess with it? What are they putting into this stuff to be delivered into the receptacle? Is the question.
And my answer will always be weapons. There is only one answer to that. And, you know, it may seem draconian on my part. It may seem that I'm a prude. It may seem that I'm like a Luddite. It may seem like I'm an idiot. But my position is nobody, no human being should have the kind of power that you just spoke of. Nobody.
No.
I don't even want it. I'm trying to undo damage that was done at that level, but nobody should have that power.
I'm two steps away from becoming a Luddite. I got to tell you. So I look for solutions. You know, you said it yourself, my friend. There's the, you know, oh, what's the solution? The solution. And we know that solution only means end of contract. It's nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
So stop contracting disease would be the first step.
Yeah, I love that one.
Right? So, you know, You've said it before, and I'd like you to take us out with this same concept. There is only one solution when it comes to biological weapons, and it has to be a biological solution.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we're working on. You know, even if it is the phytochemistry, whatever that might be, if it's apple cider vinegar to open up the molecule, to let the coconut detergent in, to finally hit it with a serine protease or some oxidizing agent. See, you don't even need just oxygen. You know, I've spoken of ozone, and, you know, I'm a proponent of ozone. Iodine is an oxidizing agent. So let's think about that, Clint. All this antioxidant nonsense. They're taking out people's thyroids. They're saying, oh, yeah, put raw broccoli in your Green Star. Going to take out your thyroid with a goitrogen. Then they're saying, you need antioxidants, and that's going to take out your thyroid peroxidase, making you hypothyroid. And then they're going to say, hey, but we got, like, this really cool iodine that we can sell you because we just destroyed your thyroid. So what we need to know is, first, how have we been attacked? We've been attacked with biological weapons. What's the solution to that? Are you going to kill, you know, 7 billion humans? I'd refigured that. You know, and this may seem flippant or just absolute, you know, just disgusting, but if you plug somebody in the back of the head every 10 seconds for 2,222 years, you could wipe out 7 billion people. But that wouldn't account for all the ones that bred in their place. So, you know, is that a solution? Well, no, because what we did, me and my team, we look for, well, what's the easy way out? Viruses have conserved genetics. So even if there might be like mutants or deviant strains, they're called quasi-species. Even if that does occur, the mechanics that make up a virus stay pretty much within the same little cassette, if you will. So if we can find a way to take out these viruses that, you know, They provoke the prions that make the amyloid that lead to the diseases that we're seeing. If we can take it out at the beginning, you know, a virus is a biological entity. If we can find its weakness, if we can eliminate that, then we can get at least on par with those that are making our lives hell. And my position has always been this. It's never wavered, but people don't get it, Clint. Because if you take out the virus is telling all these people that other folks are trying to win the hearts and minds of, the viruses are telling them how to terraform the planet for the virus. So if you get rid of the virus, then things will normalize. But everybody goes, well, we've got to win hearts and minds. And I can't get the caterpillar with the wasp grubs out of my head, because the wasp grubs went to the brain, steered the caterpillar to the top of the branch, and the caterpillar defended the grubs against all comers so that the grubs could hatch from its dying body. You know, you got to get rid of the fucking virus. And just like your board op on RBN, you know, bless him. He says, you know, I think people think when you're talking about viruses, you're talking about like a mind virus or like a computer virus. No, it's a biological entity, man.
And so the only solution is to, like you said, break that contact, break that contracted disease. That's, you know, you have to. And you know, excellent point there to end the show. Man, you know, it's one thing to, it's one thing to talk about being parasitically controlled, which, you know, it's a general term. You could say that government parasitically controls. You could call government vampires, and you'd be correct when you look up the word vamp and pyre, you know, a funeral pile, pyre, excuse me. I mean, you know, there's all these terms out there that people hear, and they'll immediately have that cognitive dissonance and say, oh, no, that's impossible. But a parasite, again, that's a generic sort of term that can mean so many different things. In this case, we are literally saying and talking about the same type of parasitic control that happens in 80% of nature, I believe, was the figure, what's his name, came up with.
Yeah.
So about 80% of the life in nature, and a lot of that life is microscopic, stuff that you don't see, you know. How can you ignore that? How can you have such cognitive dissonance unless something is causing that cognitive? How can we just ignore facts like that and you know, not at least consider the fact that the reason that we're chemtrailing and geoengineering and terraforming and doing all this shit to our, to, you know, shitting where we eat, basically, where we live, why can't we have a rational discussion about this without going all cuckoo in science fiction and X-Files? I mean, it's really, in the end, I think you agree, it was the only, it's the only thing that ever made sense to me, because none of this makes sense. None of the way people are acting, just like the way that wasp or that ladybug or anything else that's parasitically infected in order to protect its parasite as a host, nothing else makes sense to me. And I can't ignore the fact that 80% of nature is parasitic, and I would certainly say that humans are a parasitic race, not only to each other, but to their livestock and to anything else that gets in their way. Patrick, vaccinefraud.com, once more, tell people about your books and stuff.
Okay, I'm going to have a total of 15 books. I'm working on Prion Agenda, the topic of what we're talking about now, but there is some really high caliber stuff in the book I just released, which is my last book. I released it before Prion Agenda. It's called Continuum. If you can't find it on my website, then just email me, and I'll get you guys hooked up.
Yeah, I say I released my last book first.
And I haven't updated my website because I live out in the middle of the country and I'm on dial-up and I can't even, like, hardly download emails, man. But look at what we've accomplished, Clint. You know, you and me. A sound man and a farm boy, and we're ready to kick ass and take names.
Hollywood whore and a vegetable grower. Yeah.
A vegetable that grows vegetables. I'll go and write that down.
It really is. It really is amazing. I don't think people could possibly contemplate the amount of research that between you, me, and the hens.
Yeah.
The list that you have of people that contribute. You know, the 1% basically of people out there that actually help and contribute. Yeah, it's been an amazing journey, man. And thanks again for joining me. Maybe we'll do this again in the future, and maybe we'll even, I don't know, actually figure this thing out and actually be it.
Oh. Thanks, folks.
try to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list. That's retarded babble. Protesters make you Hitler soon as they start to rabble. They are nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol.